From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Republican senators closed ranks around President Donald Trump's Supreme Court appointee on Monday evening, casting nearly party-line votes to send Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the nation's highest court. That evening, she was sworn in. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine, who is in a tough re-election battle, became the only Republican who voted no, joining Democrats. Coming just a week before an election where more than 60 million Americans have cast early votes, Barrett's confirmation process is seen as deeply politicized. The GOP faces accusations of being hypocritical in their approach to the court and ensuring a conservative supermajority among the nine justices for decades to come. My guest is Jessica Mason-Piclo, executive editor of Rewire News Group and co-host of their podcast, Boom Lawyer. She's a writer and adjunct law professor in Boulder, Colorado, and a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I suppose none of it should be terribly surprising to us once Republicans began announcing their support for Trump's nominee right after the death of Justice Ginsburg. It appeared to be a done deal. And what transpired on Monday night perhaps might only surprise us in the stunning speed by which it happened, right?
I think that's a very fair assessment. Republicans have made it clear that they have a singular policy priority, which is to hold the federal judiciary as in political power. And the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett is the capstone of decades of Republican work in this area.
So when we see this appointment coming just a week before an election, what can we expect? The confirmation of Justice Barrett now to play a role regarding election-related decisions, because there's a whole variety of them. One is around voting rights, around whether absentee or mail-in ballots should be counted. Another is the possibility of a repeat of the 2000 Bush v. Gore election. Some have said that she has to recuse herself, especially from any election-related ruling around the court deciding who the next president should be.
I mean, she absolutely should recuse herself. I think the question is, will she recuse herself? And I think that likely the answer to that question is no. And you bring up a couple of very troubling cases or scenarios in which a Justice Amy Coney Barrett could be asked to weigh in very soon. In fact, as her confirmation vote was happening, the Supreme Court issued a ruling in a fight over Wisconsin mail-in ballots that suggested the court is, again, extremely hostile to any sort of voting accommodations related to COVID that states have enacted. And we saw a really disturbing opinion from Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who was part of Amy Coney Barrett's team as a litigator in the Bush v. Gore 2000 challenge. So she and Brett Kavanaugh and Chief Justice John Roberts are no strangers to these challenges. So she could weigh in ultimately on a case like out of Pennsylvania or Wisconsin, for example, where we have active challenges to mail-in ballots happening in such a way that could potentially change the results of the election. I mean, this would not be the first time that the Supreme Court has stepped in in an election and handed victory to a particular party. And in this case, we could see a repeat of 2000. And that's just in voting rights. I mean, the Supreme Court also has abortion rights case teed up for Friday that Amy Coney Barrett could be a part of deciding to take.
Let's talk about that abortion case, because the issue of abortion has been the one where Coney Barrett's position appears most starkly in opposition to, you know, the majority of the nation. She is, and of course, Republicans did not want to bring this into the conversation. And in fact, it did not come up in the hearings that she is a lifelong member of a Catholic group called People of Praise, a Catholic church that some, you know, have denounced as a fringe group. She also sits on the board of trustees of sat on the board of trustees of an anti-LGBTQ school. And her position as a very conservative Catholic, her position on abortion is so important. So what does she face and what do justices face on Friday?
Oh, well, on Friday, one of the cases that the court will be considering taking up is a challenge to a Mississippi abortion restriction that bans abortion at 15 weeks. It's a gestational marker ban. So what these kinds of bans do is attempt to ban abortion before viability, which is unconstitutional under both Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, but these states don't care. And so they have passed a bill that would ban abortion at 15 weeks. It's currently blocked. In fact, it's so patently unconstitutional, even the conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals wouldn't reinstate it. But Mississippi has asked the Supreme Court to take a look at it. The argument that they teed up after it became apparent that Judge Amy Coney Barrett would become Justice Amy Coney Barrett was to tell the Supreme Court that, in fact, Justice Roberts has created some confusion and that this Mississippi case is the perfect vehicle to solve that. And by the way, it's not really a ban. It's really a regulation on abortions that kicks in and makes it impossible to get them. So not only are they making a direct attack at Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey in terms of the line of precedent that says pre-viability abortion is something that states cannot ban outright, but they're also teeing up a ludicrous argument in which to do so, and it's sort of perfectly packaged for someone like Justice Amy Coney Barrett. And I would just remind folks that it only takes four justices to decide to pick up a case. So while Chief Justice John Roberts may have shown himself willing to moderate a little bit when it comes to abortion rights cases in June Medical Services last term, that doesn't matter anymore with Justice Amy Coney Barrett on the bench. If she and Alito and Thomas and Kavanaugh want to take this case, they can.
Wow. When you say teeing up, let's discuss what you mean by that. This abortion case in Mississippi being teed up for Amy Coney Barrett, how have conservatives used the Supreme Court, unfortunately, quite effectively, to strike down all sorts of policies, laws, legislation, and even parts of the Constitution?
I mean, this is really the long arc of abortion rights jurisprudence in this country. Since Roe versus Wade was decided over 40 years ago, conservatives have done nothing but really try to attack the heart of the opinion since. And this is part of their campaign to capture the federal courts because they know that they need the federal courts in which to do so. And so they have done so by, it's really, quite frankly, a very effective political campaign. Capturing state legislatures via gerrymandering and passing via minority rule in those states like Ohio, Mississippi, Kentucky, Tennessee, Texas, pass abortion restrictions that they think they can potentially get teed up for a Supreme Court challenge and really chip away at essential holdings. We saw this in June Medical Services, which was an attempt to really attack Whole Women's Health, which was the 2016 abortion rights win for advocates at the case or at the court. And so it is really a multi-pronged attack that starts in state legislatures and works hand in hand with conservative legal advocacy groups like the Beckett Fund and the Alliance Defending Freedom, of which Amy Coney Barrett is closely affiliated. She spoke at six events for the Alliance Defending Freedom while in her previous iteration of her career. And then the Federalist Society helps Republicans handpick judges. Sheldon Whitehouse spoke about this at length during the Amy Coney Barrett.
Right, and we did an extensive interview detailing what he helped to expose, the sort of dark money web and that long game that you're talking about, where it's not just abortion, but a whole host of conservative wish list items that get punted to the Supreme Court as fast as possible, are sort of designed to be ruled against in lower courts so that they can be appealed quickly all the way up to the Supreme Court. It's quite nefarious.
It really is. And I think, you know, what's important is we heard a lot from conservatives about if Joe Biden were to win the election, that we will see a lot of activist judging and that liberals and progressives really want judges who legislate from the bench. And I think in particular, no case really calls out the Republican hypocrisy on this the way that the Affordable Care Act case, which is teed up in November, really does, because Republicans have tried time and time again to repeal the Affordable Care Act in Congress, and they cannot do it. They have not had the votes to do so. They do not have a plan to replace the Affordable Care Act. They've been promising one for 10 years. And so what did they do?
President Trump gave his plan to Leslie Stahl after his interview on 60 Minutes. It was a giant book. There should have been a plan in there somewhere. But apparently she couldn't find it.
It was a giant book of nonsense, of like previous executive orders that had been passed and whatnot, and plans. And so, you know, but my point is Republicans have not been able to do this, but they now have a case at the Supreme Court that was shopped to get there, that is designed to strike down the Affordable Care Act in its entirety. And they're still out there telling the public that this isn't what they're doing. Right. So the fact that they won't even own their nefariousness is, I think, something worth pointing out too.
And that is coming up within, I believe, a week after the election. There's also a case, Fulton versus City of Philadelphia, which will consider whether governments must allow taxpayer-funded organizations to discriminate against LGBTQ people when providing critical services. That's also, I understand, happening next week and will be in front of the court, where now we have a justice who sat on the board of trustees of a school that I mentioned earlier, a school her children attended, a school that banned LGBTQ children from attending and banned LGBTQ teachers from teaching at.
Yeah. This case involves a foster care. The Catholic Social Services in the city of Philadelphia lost a social services contract because it was refusing to place children for foster and adoption in LGBTQ families. Amy Coney Barrett is an adoptive parent, and one of the first cases that she is going to hear on the Supreme Court could limit the adoptive rights of LGBTQ families.
Quite stunning. So we have the Affordable Care Act, abortion, LGBTQ rights just in the next week and a half. There's also, of course, the election itself, its integrity, voting rights, whether everyone's ballots will be counted or not. The Republicans have engineered this incredible supermajority. And Mitch McConnell said as much in a Fox and Friends interview, that he considers her position on the court to be a political asset for our candidates, is how he put it. It's very, very brazen. And Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor on Monday night said that the Republicans will regret doing what they did. And now people, including, you know, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are asking, will the Democrats prove Republicans wrong? Because to fight Republicans at this game, you kind of have to be as unscrupulous as them, or at least fight fire with fire.
Democrats need to understand that this is a game of power and not a game of principle. And if they understand that, then we will see policy initiatives that respond in kind. Republicans have made a very clear statement that they are worried that Democrats are going to pack the court. And one of the things that I think is really important is that if Democrats do win in November and are able to flip the Senate, for example, nobody's packing the court. What's happening is the court is getting unpacked. For the last 10 years, Republicans have been packing the court, first by denying President Obama his judicial nominees, and then by rushing through over 200 Trump nominees who are now on the bench. I mean, a quarter of all of the circuit court appeals judges are Trump appointees at this point. So the long-term effect on the courts is real. And this isn't just about partisan outcomes either. Conservatives have been starving the federal courts of funds for a long time. It takes a lot of time to get your case heard if you have been injured by a corporation, if you have experienced employment discrimination, if you are a member of a class action. These cases take years to resolve. Unpacking the courts and adding seats at every level actually advances justice and democracy in that way. We allow people to have their cases heard in a timely and efficient fashion.
And of course, for a nation this large, I mean, we're 350 million people. I'm wondering if there are other nations with smaller populations and bigger Supreme Courts.
I mean, absolutely there are. And historically, the size of our Supreme Court has changed as well. I mean, it has normally been tied to the number of circuit courts that we have. Mm-hmm. And we expanded the circuit courts from 9 to 13, but we did not expand the Supreme Court in kind to match. So at a baseline, there is an argument for adding seats that match the number of federal circuit courts of appeals that we have. let's reform it and have a Supreme Court justice from each circuit. Let's get, you know, geographic representation among our Supreme Court justices in addition to ideological and economic diversity. We still have not had a public defender on the Supreme Court. You know, these are real issues that affect real people. And when, you know, conservatives made a big deal about the fact that Justice Amy Coney Barrett would be neither a Harvard-Yale grad or a Yale law grad. And that is a big deal, because she's from Notre Dame, an excellent school, and the rest of the justices are all from Harvard or all from Yale. That's not reflective of who this country is.
Now, Barrett, unfortunately, is also quite inexperienced, is she not? I mean, Trump has said that, and the Republicans, and even some Democrats like Senator Dianne Feinstein, and I think even Joe Biden said he had no problem with her, you know, I've sort of glossed over the fact that she's never even argued a case before the Supreme Court. She has only been a federal judge for 2 years. She's very young. She is actually quite inexperienced and, you know, really adding to the evidence that she was picked for her ideology and her views rather than anything
else. She is quite young. She's 48. And you mentioned she does not have a lot of experience either on the bench or as a trial attorney. Most of her professional experience comes as a law professor. And, you know, that's okay. I mean, she, you know, I think she should frankly have a lot more trial and judicial experience. But Justice Elena Kagan was a law professor, and conservatives like to bring her up quite a bit. But Justice Elena Kagan also served as Solicitor General. So she had policy, she held policy positions and could, you know, work her way around the Supreme Court room, you know, in just a different fashion. And so I think you're exactly right. The fact that that the conservatives chose Justice Amy Barrett, I mean, we knew that she was likely going to be the choice for them to replace Justice Ginsburg should they be given the opportunity, given the fact that she is so vocal on abortion rights, that she is so vocal on all of the sort of issues that Justice Ginsburg was really built her legacy on, and that Republicans are intent on unwinding.
Let's talk about the repercussions politically in the Senate. Republicans, you know, and their hypocrisy is on full display. Maybe they think Americans won't notice that they prevented Merrick Garland from even getting a hearing at the Senate, but then rushed through Amy Coney Barrett's hearings in record speed so close to the election. But of course, Americans do pay attention. There was one Republican senator, Susan Collins, who voted with Democrats against Coney Barrett. It's very possible that Collins would have voted along with her Republican colleagues if she wasn't in a tight re-election battle next week, right? She faces Sarah Gideon. Mm-hmm. Lisa Murkowski, who voted against Barrett in the Senate Judiciary Committee, ended up voting for her in the full Senate because perhaps, you know, perhaps because she is not facing re-election next week and has to wait 2 years. So what do you make of this?
I think the Senate electoral politics around this are very interesting. On the one hand, I think that, you know, it very well could cost, rushing this nomination could very well cost Senate Republicans the majority. I think that for Mitch McConnell, that is a risk he's willing to take for lifetime control of the Supreme Court and control of the federal courts for conservatives to come. And I think that, it will be really telling to see not just the election results in a week for the Senate, but frankly, the midterm election results as well, because this is a radicalization moment for people. They understand that there is a lot at stake here in this election and with this nomination, and the hypocrisy of the Merrick Garland nomination stings, but really it's the rushing through and the just the disregard for Ginsburg's legacy and even letting the American public the opportunity to grieve her loss. When Justice Scalia died, President Obama waited 30 days before nominating Merrick Garland. And he did so in part because he understood that Justice Scalia was an important figure in American history and contemporary politics, and that the appropriate thing to do as a nation was to come together and mourn. Justice Ginsburg was still laying in state when President Trump announced Amy Coney Barrett to replace her and had the big you know, Rose Garden ceremony that turned into a COVID super spreading event. So just the disregard across the board, I think, is going to leave a lasting taste with voters. And we'll see in a week or so, you know, what those results are. But there are definitely some folks who could find themselves out of a job as a result of going along with this nomination.
And I mentioned Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski because they are considered the two moderate Republican senators who claim they are pro-choice. Then you have folks like Lindsey Graham, who, you know, told off Americans and told off Democrats 4 years ago, saying that they could use his words against him when he spoke out against allowing Merrick Garland to have a confirmation hearing, and then changed his tune, claiming that Brett Kavanaugh was treated so badly by Democrats that he was going to vote for Amy Coney Barrett. He is in a tight race in South Carolina against Jamie Harrison, who is outraising him in terms of campaign money. And, you know, this could potentially be the end of Lindsey Graham's Senate career, couldn't it?
It could. And it sounded on his Senate floor speech on Monday like he is understanding that reality. And I think this also speaks to a generational divide among Democrats. You know, you mentioned Dianne Feinstein. She really was one of the Democrats who most behaved as though this was a normal proceeding, that this was a normal nomination that should be treated in the normal course of things. And what we saw was the younger members of the Senate Judiciary Committee among the Democrats push back against that, really call out the illegitimacy of all of that. And so we even saw ripples effects of that in Senator Graham's race, where after she hugged him at the close of the Senate Judiciary Committee proceedings and thanked him for his leadership in the Barrett nomination, he received a bump in his Senate polling. So it's clear that people do not like the way that Republicans handled this process. And what Democrats need to do is really show leadership to this, which is to Representative Ocasio-Cortez's point of, will they do so?
Let's talk about, finally, what Biden may or may not do. He has, you know, said, well, first of all, a lot of the questions being laid to him use the language of the right. Are you going to allow court packing, which, you know, sounds like what the Republicans have been doing, but as we've said, would simply increase the size of the U.S. Supreme Court. And Biden just has not been a politician to, you know, have the backbone to stand up to Republicans, because I think he thinks he's still living in an era where Republicans and Democrats, quote, reached across the aisle and supported one another. So he has said in an interview that he would appoint a bipartisan commission to study the issue, and, you know, it's something like 180 days to do so, and then follow their recommendations. This doesn't quite sound like an appropriate enough response to a supermajority on the court.
So I'm of two minds of this. On the one hand, yes, I agree. It feels very much like old thinking. But on the other hand, what we have seen with the Amy Coney Barrett nomination is that the public itself has gone from 0 to 60 on the need for court reform through this process. And that, as a journalist who has been covering the federal courts for over 10 years, I frankly have not seen a shift in public opinion around that so rapidly. But one thing is clear is that nobody has any idea what court packing, court expansion, unpacking the court, the general public has no idea what these terms are. So a bipartisan commission, in my opinion, is actually a very good way to start the process of informing the public about what's at stake and what needs to change. And this is very much a page out of the Affordable Care Act. This is how the Affordable Care Act came to be in the rise of the Obama presidency. And so, and on the one hand, I'm not at all surprised to see that as a recommendation either. When President Obama was first elected, everybody said there's not a chance that you folks are ever going to get healthcare reform. You're going to have to convince half the country to do so. And so what do? They put together a healthcare commission and convinced half the country that this is what we needed to do, and got, you know, albeit not the best bill, but a bill passed. And so this is how policy starts now.
And in fact, that just to piggyback on that, the one part of the Obamacare plan, which was the most important and most radical, was to prevent discrimination against people with pre-existing conditions. And it has remained the one part of the plan that has been the most popular and cannot be undone politically now. Republicans and Democrats alike will not allow that to be undone, although, of course, Barrett could do that to the entire law next week.
Absolutely. And so this is where I will defend Biden's plan for a bipartisan commission, because I think we actually get to court reform when we convince the American public that we need to do it. And we have to convince the American public that it is not just the pet project of Democrats or angry progressives who don't like the way that the court ruled on a couple cases, because then it's dead in the water.
That makes sense. And certainly it would allow a more democratic process to unfold instead of falling to the low standards that the Republicans appear to have taken this democracy to.
I think that's a very fair point.
Jessica, give out a website for Rewire News Group.
We do. Please visit us at rewirenewsgroup.com. And if you can, listen to our podcast, Boom Lawyered. We've been covering the Amy Coney Barrett nominations throughout its entirety, and we are staying on the Supreme Court and the impact of the 6-3 conservative majority.
Excellent. That's rewirenewsgroup.com. Thank you, as always, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jessica Mason-Piclo is executive editor of Rewire News Group and co-host of their podcast, Boom Lawyered. She's a writer and adjunct law professor in Boulder, Colorado. We've been discussing the implications of Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation to the Supreme Court. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.